hold off on the minutes until we get quorum of members here. And in the meantime, we're just going to go right to you and talk about the bus transformation project.
Sure. How long do you want me to talk for? I know there's time for questions and answers as well, so just want to...
You have as much time as you want to take.
Okay.
I think less than 20 minutes would be just great.
I cannot speak for longer than 20 minutes.
I can't imagine you're going to take all night, but yes, there's no hard constraint on it.
Okay.
Yeah, so we've had some presentations at the questions and ours that are longer than that.
Certainly.
Sure. Can I introduce? Okay, I'll start. My name is Julie Hirshhorn. I'm a Metro staff person. I work in the Office of Bus Planning and Scheduling. And I am one of the Metro staff representatives to the bus transformation team. And we're delighted to have Laura Bayala here today. Laura runs a very well-regarded consulting firm in this area, and Laura's firm, along with some other big firms, are working for Metro on this project, the Bus Transformation Project. We started this last summer, I think. Seems like I've been talking about it for a long time. I think the actual project kicked off last summer. So we're well along in a lot of the progress that we're making, and I will turn it over to Laura to give you the rundown completely.
Okay, thanks, Julie. So for any of you who were watching online or were there in person, there was a presentation about this to the board, WMATA board, on January 24th. So this is sort of an overview for everyone here in the room and whoever else might be reading the minutes later. So the bus transformation project really started, is there a clicker I can use?
There's not, so just sort of.
Oh, okay, right. There you go. The reason that WMATA wanted to start on this project was that the region has continued to evolve a lot over the last many, many years, certainly since the bus network started 40, 50 years ago, the current Metro bus network. And there's a lot more options in the region now. It's not just bus and rail anymore now, as we all know. There's Uber and Lyft and bike share and scooter share. And so really, there was a thought that we need to figure out how to make the bus network work better within this region, within the changing landscape of different growing areas and all the different options that are out there. So, next slide. So besides the changing landscape, there's a few reasons that we really wanted to do this study. Number one is buses are slow, and I think anybody who rides them knows that. They're getting slower, not because of any faults of the bus, but because there's a lot more congestion. And fewer people are riding the bus. There's been a 13% decline in bus ridership region-wide, and that's not just Metro Bus. It's an average, if you include Ride-On and Fairfax Connection and all the others, over the last 5 years. And that's really not any different than what's happening in cities across the country. Due to a variety of factors, nobody can say exactly what, how to break down that 13% decline, but it's, you know, from increase in TNC use, the Ubers and Lyfts, a large increase in the number of people telecommuting, low gas prices in this region, with some of the Metro Rail challenges that have happened over the last few years, ridership to the Metro Rail has declined, and so we're losing riders that way. And also the bus operating model is not sustainable. There's costs continue to rise, ridership falls, we have even less funding to fund the operations. So we really wanted to come up with a regional solution. And while WMATA is the sponsor of the study, all the local jurisdictions are very involved in all phases of the study. So, next slide. So, really,
do you think someone was
catching on?
Can you just clarify when you say all regional buses?
So in this study, what we're calling local bus. So it includes DC Circulator, Fairfax Connector, Ride On, the bus in Prince George's County,
Q
Dash in Alexandria, and ART. It does not include commuter buses like PRTC and Loudoun County commuter bus. However, it also does include Loudoun County Transit, which is their local transit, because while Loudoun is not yet paying into WMATA, it is part of the compact and will obviously, once the Silver Line opens, become a greater participant. So the project, it's time to rethink the approach to buses in the region. So that's what we're really trying to do in this project. And the project vision on the next slide was set out by members of the executive steering committee, which I'll talk about in a few minutes. And really the vision is that bus will be the mode of choice on the region's roads in the next 10 years, serving as a backbone of a strong and inclusive regional mobility system. So we know that rail will still be the region's transit backbone, but we want bus to really be the backbone of on service. Beyond the vision, we've set some goals for the study on the next slide. And we've developed this in concert with a lot of stakeholder outreach. Again, I'll talk about that in a moment. There's really five main themes for the goals. One is regional connectivity, providing good transit options to get people around, improving the rider experience, doing so in a financially responsible manner, and of course, sustaining and growing economic health and access to opportunity, particularly jobs access, and then equity, making sure that the transit system is equitable and affordable for all users. So the bus transformation project is a little bit hard to describe. I'm going to do my best, and hopefully you'll get a good sense. Really want to create a bold new vision for bus in the region. And we're going to do this by addressing five core challenges. You might just need to hit it a few times. One is the changing customer needs. There's a lot more that's expected by customers today, and rightfully so. We want to make sure that bus is keeping up with changing technology, and that's not just the app-based rideshare services and real-time information on your phone, but also technologies like signal priority that allows buses to move faster through intersections. We want to coordinate across the region. There is a lot of coordination done now, but there could be better coordination between Metrobus and the local providers. We want to maintain a sustainable cost structure, and we want to decide how service is paid for. I'm sure you've talked in the past on this committee about how different Metrobus services are funded, and so we want to make sure that we're figuring out the right way to do it moving forward. So we're going to work to respond to five questions. The first is, what is the role of buses in the region? There's certainly places where buses have a very strong role, where we want to have really high frequency service. Some other places where buses serve more as we want to provide coverage to people, but there may be areas in the region, in the far out areas, that it may make sense to switch to something like more on-demand service. So we want to see where different things make sense. The second question we're going to answer is, what should Metrobus operate? What should Metrobus operate versus what should Fairfax Connector operate, for example? The third question, the regional commitment to bus, is really, what is the regional commitment to speeding buses up? Obviously, WMATA doesn't own any of the roads on which it operates. So how can the region best move buses, and not just WMATA buses, but also the ride-ons and the circulators? How can the region provide support to make that happen? The fourth is, what business functions should Metrobus operate? There's certainly a lot of disparate administrative functions that are happening throughout the region. All the different bus agencies are doing marketing. All of them are doing procurement. All of them are training their bus operators. There are certain things that might make sense to centralize. And then finally, what's the best regional governance model for Metro? Is there, and for bus in the region, is Metro even the right place to house the regional bus services? So let me move on to tell you a little bit about what we're doing for public and stakeholder engagement for the project. The idea is that we're going to develop a regionally developed mobility strategy. So as I said, there's a lot of folks involved in our various committees. And you can go right to the next slide, and I'll talk a little bit more about the committees. So on the upper left, as I'm sure you might imagine, we have been meeting regularly with the WMATA leadership team to make sure that they're understanding where we're going with the project. But the committee on the upper right, the Executive Steering Committee, is really the committee that's going to be ultimately endorsing the recommendations of the study and bringing it to the WMATA board. So for those of you who were at the WMATA board meeting last week, the person who was presenting was Rob Puentes, who's the chair of our Executive Steering Committee. So that committee is made up of a number of people. It's not made up of anybody who represents any particular jurisdiction. It's made up of people who are recognized leaders in transportation and urban development in this region, and even people who have something else to bring to the table, like we have the person who's in charge of customer relations for Southwest Airlines on the panel, who can bring sort of another industry's perspective on serving customers. And then we have two more in the weeds committees. One is the technical team, which has a number of folks from throughout WMATA, different departments within the agency, but also folks from every jurisdiction in the region. Somebody from each jurisdiction who deals with transit planning, but somebody also who deals with policy. And then we have the strategy advisory panel, which is a large group of about 80 people that includes more people at the jurisdictions, but also representatives of we have citizen appointees on the committee. There's one person from each jurisdiction on this committee that's on the strategy advisory panel, also somebody from the COG, I'm forgetting the name of it now, but the COG Citizens Advisory Committee, three people from that on the committee, also people who represent different community-based organizations that work with different communities, disability communities, minority communities, low-income communities.
Question about the membership on that. You've got people from the Accessibility Advisory Committee on there, but not the Riders Advisory Committee?
We have,
I know there's a lot.
Yes, I'm trying to remember. I'd have to look back. I know we have the COG Citizens Advisory Committee.
Right, looks like you've got one member from each jurisdiction from there.
From there, and I believe we have a few from, we do have one member from each jurisdiction from the Accessibility Advisory Committee as well. I cannot, is anybody in this room on the SAP?
No.
Then maybe we might not have anybody from this committee on that. And we can certainly add. On the next slide, just to tell you about our engagement to date. Next slide, John. So we, for the general public, what we've done so far is we've done a survey to try to get folks to provide their input on what their ridership patterns are today and how they make their decisions about modes. Because right now it's sort of at such a high level, it's hard to get people to react to particular recommendations because we're not there yet. So we received almost 6,000 responses to our surveys. We collected these through online, but also at 20 different pop-up events throughout the region. We had a kickoff summit where we had a number of participants to try to start to brainstorm some ideas that would make sense to come up with on this study. We've had a bunch of committee meetings. We've also met with each WMATA bus operating garage and talked to the bus operators to get their input. We've done interviews with lots of stakeholders. We've done various briefings to different committees throughout the region. And we've had a lot of social media access as well. So I'm going to just talk very briefly about what we found in the public survey. The public survey was open for 2 months. And I think I already covered this, but what the survey asked people about. So of the 6,000 respondents, 16% of the survey respondents were low income, which does track to the regional proportion of the region that is low income. And by low income, we're using WMATA's definition of low income in its Title VI program, which is $30,000 a year or lower household income. It does underreport low-income bus riders, because nearly 50% of the bus riders are low-income. On the minority status, 45% of the survey respondents were non-white, which tracks closely with the regional levels, and 66% of the respondents are between the ages of 25 and 54, so just to give you a sense of the ages. In terms of the responses by jurisdiction, on the next slide, you can see, for example, the district, 43% of the people responding to the survey live within the District of Columbia. The percentages don't necessarily match the percentage of people in the region who live there. So 43% of the people in this region do not live in the District of Columbia. However, it tracks pretty well with bus ridership overall. So the largest number of bus riders within the district, and we have the largest number of survey responses there. So you can see 37% of the region's bus riders live in DC and 43% of the survey respondents, and so on. Fairfax County, 10% of the bus riders in the region live in Fairfax, and 16% of our respondents live in Fairfax. In terms of, on the next slide, whether the respondents were current bus riders or not, 78% ride transit at least once a week, so we consider them to be regular riders. 68% ride local bus at least once per week. And then 20%, one out of five, reported that they use Uber, Lyft, or some other ride-hailing app at least once per week, and you'll see in the upcoming results that that was not constrained to a particular income bracket at all. I'm sure this will not come as much surprise to folks, but the top three reasons for live riding local buses: it's the closest option to home or work, it's most affordable, and it's easy to use. And the top three barriers to riding were: it comes in frequently, it's slow, and it doesn't go where I need to go. One interesting thing we asked was whether people ride the bus more or less than they did 3 years ago. And what we found pretty interesting was that 80% of the people who currently ride the bus are riding more than 3 years ago, but 67% of people who ride the bus less than once a week are riding less. So we interpret that to mean that those who have been bus riders are riding it more, but those who were kind of occasional bus riders have kind of given up and they're riding it even less. So that's something that we need to address through this study. Most people who said that they are riding riding less or more was a result, however, of either their home location moving or their work location moving. The other interesting thing on this slide is that both people who are riding less and who are riding more said one of the reasons I'm riding more is because the buses are more reliable. And other people said, the reason I'm riding less is buses are less reliable. So obviously everybody has a different perception of reliability. And you know, reliability is something that we definitely want to try to address through the recommendations of the study. On the next slide, just really briefly, in terms of if local bus were not available, how would people get around? Those that don't ride the bus very frequently are more likely to say they would use Uber and Lyft, or something similar, if the bus wasn't there. And fewer non-white and frequent bus riders said that they would drive, implying that they actually have access to a car. And then the other thing we asked in the survey was for people to identify gaps in local bus service. Like, do you think, we kind of gave them almost a matrix and said, you know, do you need more service between your home jurisdiction and what other jurisdictions? And more than half of the service gaps people identified were within the same jurisdiction. So while a lot of people said, you know, gee, there's a gap in service between jurisdiction A and jurisdiction B, a lot of people said there's even gaps within their own jurisdiction. Can you go to the next slide, please? One of the most interesting parts of the survey is everybody was given this fake 20 coins and kind of a list of things where they can invest the state money in. So if they really wanted to, if they thought more frequent service was the most important, they could put all 20 coins in more frequent service and move on, or they could spread it out among the different options. And one thing we found really interesting was that regardless of how you cut the income of the respondents, the minority status, the location of where they live, whether they're frequent riders or non-frequent riders, the top three investment priorities were made for more frequent service, more reliable and faster service, and then more direct buses with fewer transfers. The affordable fares overall came in fifth as an investment option, but if you just looked at the lower income respondents, that moved up to number four. Next. So just going back to the five strategic questions that we're answering through this study, one was the role of buses in the region. Where does it make sense to have bus, and where does it maybe make sense to have other services, as well as what is the regional commitment to bus in terms of providing priority for bus and reliable roads on which the bus can operate. We found that, you know, in general, respondents believe that bus should be accessible to all, and that there should be access to some type of bus service between, you know, throughout the region. And in fact, in terms of geography, people felt there should be some form of bus everywhere. Residents in Alexandria and Prince George's were more likely to cite hours of service as a barrier, not so much. They certainly talked about location, but also the limited hours, which isn't surprising based on the more limited hours of service of the bus and Dash operate. And then respondents also strongly supported preferential treatment for bus on roadway, given their desire for more reliable and faster service. Last slide, our next steps. So just taking a step back, we have defined, in November, we kind of coalesced around these five strategic questions that we're trying to answer. We have been conducting a lot of analysis to answer those questions, both through data analysis, but also analyzing the results of the survey and meeting with these committees. And then we'll be bringing out some draft strategies out to the public and to more groups in the spring, towards late spring, early summer. And then once we have all these strategies that we've shared them with the public and we receive input back, we'll be creating sort of a roadmap, so kind of a next steps of what needs to happen over the next 10 years to actually implement the strategies and make these changes. I'm sure there are lots of questions. I'll open it up. At this time.
I know I have one. No immediate questions from others. You said that there's some respondents said the buses got more reliable, others said they got less reliable. Was there any connection to what routes that people tended to take, or either routes or corridors?
The survey did not ask what routes they took. I mean, we certainly have analyzed a lot of data as to, based on the data, which routes have become more reliable and less reliable over time, but we're not able to map it to the survey responses.
Okay. Valerie and Clarence and Maria.
So, your rights being snap changed in the next 40, 50 years. One of the things that I find very interesting, I have an adult daughter who is in Portland, Oregon, and my adult daughter does not own a car. She usually rides a bike, or if not, she takes a bus. And, you know, it's interesting to me because I wonder how much this idea of climate change and saving energy for the future is that it has some greater pull than perhaps it has had in the past. You know, all you need is a big change in water level to get people really interested. So I didn't see anything related to that, and I know this was just a summary, but I think it might be another way to reach out to folks, another motivating factor. So I didn't see that in any other
way. Yeah, that's definitely a good point. I don't think we've gotten into how to market bus to people so much as how do we make it better so it sort of sells itself, and then the next step once you make it better, how do you get people to use it? And there's lots of other ways that would attract different people, and certainly the environmental element would certainly be attractive, I wish, to more people, but certainly for the younger mm-hmm. folks, who I imagine your daughter is in that category.
Thank you. Sorry, I came in late. Can you bike? Just went outside. But looking over the materials, I think it's really great. One of the things I find is interesting about the busing here in DC is that there's a very much like a class divide to it, where there's sometimes people who, but even within that subgroup, it's like people, once they know how the bus system works, they really much like it. Like I hear far fewer complaints, at least from anecdotally, from my friends, regarding like the bus system that they use, like it's pretty deep into the weeds of the city than I do hearing about Metro. So I think that's good in some ways. I think the larger question is kind of like tapping into that larger demographic and making them sort of see that it's not, you know, it's not streetcar pretty, but it's also like much more practical. Getting around the city and finding those other spaces in there. So I don't know, I'm just kind of wondering, like, what is that engagement piece with, like, because I work for a university, I work for Georgetown, which is, like, not Metro Rail friendly at all, but, like, those are the people who are going to become, like, the new residents in the city because you have such a transient presence in there, just, like, forward thinking about reaching that next population.
Yeah, I think that and the previous point about climate change, and Julie, feel free to add to my answer, but are both things that we should address in the roadmap. So what you're talking also is sort of not only making it better, but making sure that people are aware and understand how helpful the bus can be. And so while we are certainly going to be engaging people throughout the plan, that's more to get people's input on what we're doing, whereas during the roadmap, as we're making changes over those 10 years, after the study ends, which should be over this fall, how do we get people engaged along the way so they understand how important and how helpful a bus can be?
I'd be curious to hear why you think the streetcar is prettier than a bus.
Oh, I mean, I don't subscribe to that line of thinking. I know just there, but there is very much, anecdotally, just what people experience, that there is rightly wrong, I think mostly wrong, with like a class component to riding the buses here in the city that doesn't exist with like or to a lesser extent than rail or metro. And so people, you know, they'll take an Uber cool before they'll take a bus, even though it'll be.
So you say there's a cost component to it?
Oh, not a cost component. I mean, people will pay the premium
to ride the bus.
To take an Uber or Streetcar versus taking the bus, even though it'll be like.
So just to discuss that.
Yeah.
Do you think, how much of that do you think is because people aren't really sure what bus to get on or where it's going, whereas with Uber, you say, here's where I want to go, and the car takes you there, and you don't have to think about it?
I think it's definitely, I would make a distinction between routine trips that a person's taking and then sort of like intentional, like I'm going to a house party kind of everything like that one. I think for people who, once you get into your neighborhood, you're familiar with, you do familiarize yourself with the bus system, and just kind of like, you know, buses are always about connecting to kind of critical important points. And so if you have ones that's like, it's connected to like where my grocery store is, or it's connected to like, you know, big points of interest, then you're just gonna like fall into a loop of doing that. And I think then you get into the questions about like, you know, reliability of service, like consistency, and like how regular it is to use, because, you know, I think Metro always has to deal with, you know, if I take a bus when I can take an Uber pool, is like the lingering threat for all of the services out there. And I think the further out you get, the more or less like you're to go to a bus. Like I, you know, if I want to, I live in Noma and I want to go visit my friends in Woodley Park, it's just like, I'm like, the videos are going back now. Like, I'm going to take an Uber pool in there. But if in my own little area, there's like, oh yeah, then like I might hop on the bus to get in the next one.
So it sounds like you just like talked about a whole bunch of stuff there.
The minute you have like ideas.
As long as the streetcar isn't that much for you, it'll make me happy.
Can I add, in response to your question, I think that a lot of people prefer the rail or streetcar or obviously Uber, because that's door to door, you know, that would be the best if you can afford it, that's, but it's an issue of scheduling, okay? Because the streetcar and rail, you figure they keep coming, you know, in a few minutes another one is gonna come. But bus, and I'm a bus rider, a regular bus rider, I actually have to take bus to get to a metro. So the issue is that you have buses that they don't run only every half hour. So if you miss that bus, you're screwed. You have to wait another half hour, you're gonna be late, you're gonna, you know, for your appointment or whatever. That is, I personally think, is the number one issue with people not wanting to take bus. Sometimes it's the schedule, most of the time the schedule in a bus is harder to keep because it depends on traffic, if there was an accident or whatever that could happen, you know, it gets affected. A water main break or, you know, all those good things that happen in winter. But there's nothing you can do to control that. So that is the number one reason that people prefer the streetcar or rail. Availability, it's basically availability.
But I think you guys, on your point about like working with the city about prioritizing buses, bus lanes on the road, kind of helps you mitigate those issues. Because when you do have like an accident, but you know like the bus will take priority in managing that, it, you know, catches you from that reliability.
Yeah, so those are two of the things that we're hoping that the study will make recommendations to address. One is, as you mentioned, the priority, which would help with reliability, but also trying to better match what services out there with what the demand is. There may always be places where there's only a bus every 30 minutes because that is all that that can be supported, but we're trying to do a better job with the study of matching places that do need every 15 minute service or every 20 minute service and getting them that level of service that's there, or maybe places that really can't support
anything more than 30 minutes, maybe there needs to be other public transportation options there in addition to the 30-minute bus service. Will?
Two things. One is, I guess, more of a statement, which is nothing that we can really do about it now, and I know you know this already, but one of the biggest challenges we have with time to stop behind traffic is paying cash in the fare boxes. And I ride the bus more than I ride the rail, and I swear there's daylights just there. I scream when the bus is like, come on. And you know, people get over the dollar because the machine doesn't take them, and so it gets crazy. But yeah, so that's one of the biggest things, and we're not going to get rid of that. So size gets rid of cash. So
I think we will eventually, but it's not going to happen right away. It's going to be part of this other technology wave.
Yeah, I mean, I like the fact that you know we've got the study going on some of the cashless buses, but again, that's a narrow, you know.
We have to make accommodations for everyone, not everyone has the ability to.
Oh, of course. No, but the other thing is, and I mean, I don't know what other regions you've worked in, but I'm curious to see or find out, are you working or you're aware of any other regions across the country that are doing something similar? So I'm sure all of their systems are aging and, you know, they must have some type of idea of what's going on with their future plans.
So there's a lot of cities that are right now either have recently or are currently redesigning their bus network to make things better match with current demand and address the changes that are happening with all of the new mobility options. This region is happening throughout the country. They've redesigned the bus network in the past few years in Columbus, Ohio, in Houston, in Baltimore. They're currently and other places as well. There's currently studies similar to this, but a little more fine-grained in Los Angeles, in Hampton Roads actually as well, and there's some other cities that are planning to do so. The thing that's very different here in this region and why there's sort of this kind of higher level look before we get down into exactly what might need to change is that we have so many bus operators. There's other regions that have, you know, two bus operators. There's actually no other region in this country, not that have eight bus operators. And that doesn't include, I don't think, PRTC or MTA commuter bus. And so we have this issue here that before we can even think about what we want to change, we have to figure out what makes sense for all of the regional providers and figure out what the best regional solution is. So this region is unique in that aspect. Yeah.
Okay, Lorraine, your actual question.
Yeah. Well, yes, it actually touches that point because the issue with the regional systems, from my personal experience, I always took Metrobus. But guess what? Metrobus keeps cutting their service around my neighborhood. And
ask where you live.
I'm from Arlington, and South Arlington, and I depend on the bus because there's only two metro stations in South Arlington. So I have to take bus. And like today to come here, I have to take two buses to connect to metro. Okay? So the issue is that when Metrobus discontinues for whatever reason, not popular enough or whatever, ART has to step up and cover
that is at the discretion of Arlington County. Arlington County saying, no, we would like to provide that service. We want to do it with our system rather than the Metrobus system. There's a perception that the local jurisdictions can do it more cheaply than Metro can. In some cases that's true, in some cases we're not so sure it's true. But this is one of the goals, I think, of this study, is even though in the original Metro Compact, Metrobus is the regional provider. You know, we, as the regional provider, getting everybody's funding coming in, should have some say over what the regional bus network looks like. As the years have gone by, and Ride-On was started up, and Connector was started up, and ArtBus was started up, the jurisdictions have assumed or taken, depending on what seat you're sitting in, more and more of the say over who's going to run which routes. To the point, in my opinion, of kind of cherry picking some of the better stuff. The routes that are better, being easier to run, don't have as long a span of service, so you don't have to hire operators weekends, late nights, and everything. They've taken over a lot of that service, so without getting into exactly where you live and the knit noise of from us. There's a lot of decisions that go into this. And so, as Laura mentioned, the study is trying to bring us back to a regional perspective about bus service. And just because Arlington County may have the funds to run bus services they want to, Prince George's County may not be in that situation. In fact, Maryland funds a lot of their, all of their service. So, you know, they go there to the state. So to take a look at this region-wide and make some regional strategic decisions to go forward with the path of some of these. So I can't guarantee you that your bus will come any more often, but maybe you'll know what's going on.
No, I do understand that point, because I know the two instances. Well, first one, when I purchased my house, was because it had access to a bus route, metro bus route, okay? That was the reason I purchased that house in particular, was accessibility to transit. Guess what? 2 years later, that bus route was eliminated. We had tremendous hearings in Arlington County, and after the meeting, after that, those hearings, that's when, well, at the time, the board member that represented at that time, they decided that ART would take over that. They had not planned, because according to what they said, what Metro said, it was, they didn't have enough ridership to keep going running that route. And guess what? When the hearing happened, there were so many people there, you know, to protest, that then the county said, well, you know, the decision that Metrobus has already been made, so we'll take over that route. But in other situations, when the Department of Human Services was relocated from close to Clarendon Metro Station to a location where there's no metro station aboard around, then ART took over, and that was because they had the relocation of the actual Department of Human Services required, you know, transit to that location, and then, you know, all of a sudden there was a huge increase of bus routes. So it works both ways. So the issue works both ways, and my whole thing is that you have to work more in conjunction with the regional services, because it is not always the locality decision. It has to be. It is sometimes because Metrobus is changing whatever, you know. So we have to respond.
I have a question for y'all, and then to Val and Clarence again. Granted, I'm a little spoiled right now. I spent last week in Columbia, which has some of the best bus systems in the world. So coming back to D.C. after that is a little disappointing. But will any of your suggestions in the bus transportation project be operational, as opposed to big picture strategic? Will there be any operational suggestions that you're providing about ways to make the buses specifically run faster, given that slowness is one of the major issues?
Well, I think some of the recommendations are around transit signal priority, bus priority corridors, bus only lanes, or more high occupancy vehicle only lanes would be operational improvements.
Would there be anything like front boarding, rear exiting?
Oh, we talk about that all the time.
Does it go anywhere?
There will be things along those lines as part of our strategy. We will not, through this study, get to the point where we're doing a pilot of that, for example, or doing any kind of detailed research on whether that's something that specific makes sense. However, we will be identifying items like that as part of the strategy that would then be in the roadmap. Let's say we would assign it in here and say, all right, in year one or year two, whatever it is, we're going to do a detailed study and pilot of front door boarding, rear door lighting, things like that. So definitely some more nitty-gritty stuff like that, but at a higher level at this stage.
Okay. I ask in part because so many of these operational things, transit signal priority, bus lanes, et cetera, require partnership with some of the local partners who may or may not be moving at the same speed that you would like to. But it seems that is one example of something that is entirely within WMATA's control.
That goes against years of tradition.
Traditions can change. So,
thank you. I don't know if anyone said thank you, but thank you for doing this. Thanks for stepping back and looking at it. A couple of points. I want to follow up on something that we talked about a little bit earlier about why do people choose bus versus Uber group or whatever, Uber or whatever. Pool. And I just want to share a little bit. I used the metro to go to Tacoma, and I used to go to Tacoma and then take the bus to my home or close to my home. But what was happening is I kind of worked a little bit later than a lot of other folks, so all of a sudden there would be like three buses all in a row. They all turn off and drive away from Tacoma because they arrive late, and they all arrive one after another, 2-3 minutes apart, and they don't take anyone away. It's very frustrating. So I said, great, no problem. I will change my patterns and I will go to Petworth and I'll take a bus from there because they have a lot more buses, which is true. Except, you get the get a lot of marijuana smoke at Petworth. You get a lot of, I've had people who seem to have mental health problems come up right in my face and talk to me, and they say, well, I'm taking Uber Pool. Because it's not, I don't care what folks do in their own time, but I don't want to be bothered by it, no offense. So I feel a little bit more uncomfortable at Petworth than I would someplace else. But I would observe that it seems like they now have someone wearing a metro vest up because it used to be a lot of Uber pools that come pick people up right there at the stop. And so then the buses couldn't get in. And so now they have someone standing there making sure that the buses can get in, which also tends to get other people to disperse. So I just say that it's not just the bus. It's not about the bus. It's also all the things around the bus. And then here was my question. You were talking about a bold new approach. What technology options are available? Are you looking at driverless buses? Are you looking at, forget the schedule, we'll just have cameras and when there's 10 people, we'll send a bus over. What kind of crazy, not crazy, but we really do need to think very differently about this. What different ways of thinking are we employing in this process?
I'll list a few, maybe Julie has some others. So we're definitely looking at more on-demand services for, not right now just on-demand services for paratransit riders, of course, but for the general population. So we're looking at where some things like that might make sense, whether they're operated by Metro, that we don't know yet, but recommending things like that. We are looking at, again, at a high level of different ways of operating, for example, we could be looking at different ways of sharing bus garages. Right now, there's, you know, most, for the most part, they're disparate between WMATA and other jurisdictions' operations. There could be innovative things in that way. We're looking at, we're starting to think about different fare collection methodologies, whether it's cashless, cash-free bus routes, but looking at different options there. We're looking at things like, are there ways where in other cities we're seeing a lot where TNCs are being subsidized for particularly lower income people, so that, Ubers and Lyfts, to get them to transit. So for example, right now there's places where we have to offer transit where it's not necessarily very effective. And if you live there and you have the money, you can take an Uber to the nearest transit route and you're good to go. But there's a lot of other cities where they're saying, all right, not only, if we all know there's an application process to be certified as a paratransit, but maybe there's an application, could be, in other cities they're doing this, an application process to be certified as low income, which gets you certain privileges, like a different way to use an Uber or a Lyft to get you part of your trip. So,
are there any other? Yeah, it's not quite as sexy, bold as some of these are. But for instance, on Georgia Avenue, since the past few months, we have been using the homegrown technology developed at Metro to use old cell phones and do a program on the phones to say, okay, how far am I away from the bus in front of me? How far am I away from the bus in back of me? And it lights up red if you're too close, and it lights up yellow if you're too far away. And it tells the operator just, he stops at the red light or picks somebody up, okay, how am I doing? How am I spacing with the bus in front of me? So we, there should be a technology on the bus to tell the bus operator this, but, there isn't. So an inventive person out in one of the shops came up with this technology using old cell phones. So yes, we're trying to do what we can. As far as like having a camera and seeing 10 people, I mean, that's a great concept. But I'm thinking about, okay, how could we execute on that? And some of the things to do something like that would basically require that you had several buses standing by waiting for those people to come up. So are you better off, making those, like, in effect, strategic buses waiting until the crowd, or do you take history as precedence and say, all right, so every Monday through Thursday at 5:05, we know we're going to have a group of people here, and so we'll just schedule a bus. But we're really trying to do a lot more of what we're doing on George Avenue, which we call internally headway management. And so those are the baby steps we're taking before Laura's grand ideas come in. We're also looking at electric vehicles. Not yet at the driverless vehicles. We have a little problem with that on the train side.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to approach that one cautiously. But electric vehicles definitely seem to be coming into play quite a bit. And so we're taking a look at doing some pilots on those. Profiting from the experiences of other cities and maybe taking some things. So we actually have one all-electric vehicle now, which is one out of Western Garage up in Upper Northwest. The one we have, it was an early model, and it has a very short range before we have to go back and recharge it. So it has a limited applicability for us. But yeah, we are trying. We're trying. We're a big public bureaucracy.
All right, I've got Clarence, Rebecca, Rebecca, and then Lorraine again.
Awesome. The problem I had is just, what's the plan, strategically, like connecting with other, like, transportation services and options? For example, like, I ride my bike very often. Like, we're speaking very much, like, putting with Capital Bike Share, but, like, lining up stations or even having bike racks near popular bus stations are, so where in which, like, it's, the idea is more intuitive, so like I'm riding to here and then I'm going to pick up a bike from right there versus, I get off a DuPont Circle a lot oftentimes, in which the G2 to campus is a little bit further away from where the bike station is, and there's another one in there. But like, strategically, like, matching us with like a point to another point versus it, like, and it flows in all one stream of thought versus like these two separate things that we're doing.
I don't think that we've really thought about in this project how we might, like, we're not going into the details of like where to site bike racks or where to site Capital bike share stations. I know that at least Arlington and DC, I'm not familiar with the planning process in the other jurisdictions, but their process for siting Capital bike share stations is very much based on a number of things, including where you can access transit, because people, I don't remember the percentage, but there's a very high percentage of Capital bike share trips where the person is either transferring to or from a higher mode of transit. In terms of, you know, actual, you know, bike racks for your own personal bike, those tend to be done more at the jurisdictional level. It's not something that we were getting into on this study, but it's something that, you know, we certainly recognize as a common mode of access to the buses.
Rebecca, which may actually be chat.
I'm fine, Rebecca.
Okay.
My card. First off, to the committee, I guess I missed the memo. I was here at 6:30, didn't realize you guys were starting at 6, so I apologize for that. But I think that's a good, I guess that started last month. So I'll make it 6 o'clock next month, which is good. I was at the public hearing last night, and several of the individuals that spoke talked about areas that are really transit deserts. There are no buses that really service their areas. So, and that, some of that testimony really struck me, that they're so dependent on buses that don't show up and can't get to work. And this was like in DC, I think along Mass Ave, by the cathedral. And so I'm wondering, do we take a look at areas like that? And do we know where the problems are? I know that as far as people with disabilities, in Prince George's County particularly, buses are routinely cut off there. And so you have a lot more people who jump onto, well, disabled people, that are jumping onto paratransit, metro access, which when you look at it, you're paying $50, roughly $55 a trip. So maintaining the bus network is critical. Reinforcing the bus network so that it is more robust is even better than just shuttling people to the subway system. Being able to take buses that are going to parallel alongside the yellow lines that are going to be out a lot this summer would be very critical to help transportation. Those were a few of the things that came up last night in the public hearing that was here. So particularly the issue of, you know, if you take the bus away, a lot of times, and you can even strand people with disabilities because the paratransit mirrors the fixed route system. You take the bus away, then people with disabilities may or may not have a way to get out and about and that sort of thing. So that's pretty critical. And so anything that can be done, and we actually have on the disability community side, we have an agreement with WMATA that if they are going to change a bus route and they're going to discontinue a bus route, and on that bus route, you have people with disabilities who take metro access, they've got to come up with some other way to do it, because not only would you disenfranchise people with disabilities alongside perhaps you're disenfranchising people who are transit dependent and need that bus. So there's a lot that goes into it. Appreciate the fact that the study's going on. Lastly, the only other thing that I would add is about a year and a half ago, I went up to National Harbor to a place called Local Motors. I don't know if you've seen it. Have you ever heard of it? Yes?
No.
Okay. What's interesting about the vehicle that they have there, and it's futuristic transportation, you walk into the vehicle with a smart card. In my case, it would say that I'm blind. As I walk past the seats, the seats that are vacant would feel like the door's opening. The seats that are occupied would feel to me, through haptics, that the door, that there's no vacancy there. They would have microphones that would announce to me, just to me, that what I'm passing as far as streets are concerned. And then for other people with disabilities, because they would be under a smart card, as you walk onto the smart vehicle, it would recognize what your disability is and change the messaging on that bus to accommodate that disability. Pretty cool stuff. So if you get a chance to go up to Local Motors in National Harbor, take a look at the Ollie trolley. It's pretty cool.
I just wanted to make one quick comment. The Metro staff who was working with the transformation study has been working pretty closely with the Metro Access Office to talk about the implications.
Yeah, and there's also the first strategic choice, the strategic question, excuse me, that we're answering is where does bus make sense? And so a lot of that is looking at, are there places that should have more service or should have service at all that don't have service now? And so that's just something that we're looking at very carefully to make sure that we're matching service with the needs.
All right, Yvette and Lorraine.
Good afternoon, ladies. I got the memo when I was on the Metro, but I couldn't pull it up if the meeting started at 6. And forgive my tone, I've had a dead week with Metro, and I'm not very happy right now. The concern I have on reading through this is that all this is great, but my problem is the consistency of buses. I choose to catch Metro because I don't want to catch an Uber or a Lyft tour. I'm not disabled like Patrick, but I have a cane because I have challenges with my knee. To make a long story short, my pet peeve is I have a problem, buses leave before time. And I get to the bus stop and I'm looking for my bus. And other people are saying the bus has left. So my day started off going to the bus stop to catch the bus that had left already. I had to go to another station like Valerie that I choose not to go to meet the bus that left early, which meant more money from the Metro bus to the subway. This is how my week has been. I don't get refunded for that. My job does not give me a subsidy. I wrote several letters to Ramada this week telling them, please have somebody monitor the bus because this is crazy. Several passengers were left.
Did you write today?
I wrote today, Tuesday, and Wednesday. I'm gonna write again tomorrow because it's crazy. It just doesn't make any sense. And for me to have to catch a bus to the subway to the same bus that left early, what's the logic in that? I'm paying double fare for something I didn't do. And it's not just myself. I saw a lot of my passengers and I said, what happened? The bus left early. And I said, this is crazy. And I'm tired of it, I really am. I don't know if I need to sit on the general manager's desk. I don't know what to do anymore. I'm very fed up. I choose to catch Metro and not so much the subway. But I need to be consistent for me when I come out of my house at nighttime to catch a bus that's already gone. It's called the F6 New Carlton. And I've never seen anything. I've never seen a bus that leaves early and not by the schedule. And all the drivers are looking at me going, we're on time. You've got to be kidding me.
Where are you leaving from?
West Hinesville Metro Station. I didn't tell them I catch the bus every day, so I knew they were telling the truth. But I'm like,
and
this is every day.
What time do you want to leave West Hinesville?
The bus is supposed to leave at 7:46. The bus leaves at 7:40, 7:43. And it's people at the bus stop getting off the Metro to catch the bus, and we're getting left. And it's my choice to catch the Metro, but come on, I've got to do better. I had paid double fare this week from the subway to the bus to catch a bus that left me to meet it, like Valerie said, at the next station. I should never do that. It doesn't make any sense. To me, it doesn't. And I don't get reimbursed for that. I had to put my money on my fare card to come, because my money was gone doing all that this week. And I'm very perturbed. And if someone doesn't answer my letter from Metro, I'm going to be down here tomorrow sitting on somebody's desk. 479 News. All she remembers is Rack yesterday. And I want something to tell about this. I'm very serious. I'm very perturbed. There are a lot of people in Maryland who catch public transportation. And our buses are every hour after rush hour. Am I telling the truth, Will? Every hour after rush hour, we have to catch an Uber or a Lyft or do this to work, hike, because there's no bus service where we live at. And it's not conducive to come out your house to meet a bus that is gone already. That's all I have to say, and I apologize for being indignant with you. you all, but I've had a week with Metro. I have nothing nice. Don't give me no comment. It was this past, I don't want to talk nothing about Metro. Don't give me no comment cards. It was so great, right? About Metro this week. I was not happy at all. So I don't know what tomorrow's going to bring me Friday. This has got to stop. This is just crazy. Thank you so much.
And Lorraine.
Okay, this is again going to the working with the regional services. If you guys could coordinate and have the same technologies on all the regional, within the regional services and Metro bus, it would be so much more convenient. Right now, let's say the GPS system that they have, I remember that when they were establishing it, I asked them, is it the same thing that Metro has? And they said, oh no, it's a different one. And I said, why? And it had to do with, you know, they having to go through bids and all this, you know, kind of thing. So seems to me that the most logical thing would be to be all, like you said, I understand this difficult because of all the different jurisdictions involved, but it would be so much more convenient as a person that takes regional and I have used Ride On and Dash, and you know, so it's not only ART, so it just depends on where I'm going. It would be so much more convenient to have just the one thing as opposed to having to connect with something else and well, this is not connecting, or having to have this other app for this and another app for the other, and you know, so that would be very convenient.
And with that, I think we've given you a lot of words. Maybe some of them are useful.
Yeah. Thank you. It's really helpful.
Thank you both for spending part of your evening with us. I would imagine we will certainly be interested in staying on top of this one as it goes through the transformation project, as the transformation continues. So, John, as we think about what future meetings will hold at some of these milestones for the bus transformation project, it would be great to hear from you or whoever again.
Thank you.
Oh, I forgot. You mentioned about the RAC number. So do you want to contact John about
that? Yeah, I'll take that back as an action item. Yep. I will write that down. Thank you.
And feel free to take a cookie or two on your way out. There's a bunch.
Thank you.
All right, going back in time a little bit to handle some of the administrative items, I want to start with public comment and just find out if there's anybody who is not a RAC member who would like to make some comments to the group. And if so, they are welcome to do so. If not, then we will just scoot right along. All right. John sent out minutes earlier today. I don't know if everybody had a chance to take a look at them, but I'm hoping we can go ahead and approve them. Was there enough time to look at the minutes and decide whether or not you are good with them?
Yeah. I have a change.
Okay.
Page number 6. 4 paragraph. So you have that, I suggest it would be helpful to include driving directions. It's actually driving times.
Oh. I move to accept the minutes as presented.
Seconded.
Okay. I just had a question because it says December and January.
I had the same question.
I'm talking about January too.
Okay, so we are approving January's minutes, not December's. Are December's forthcoming?
They are.
Okay.
Four.
Then we have had a motion and second to approve January minutes.
Second.
Any opposition? Any abstentions? All right, with that, we secure unanimous approval. All right, today and last month, the meetings both started at 6, and I believe, if I'm understanding correctly, John, that is the new meeting time. The plan is to make it permanently 6 instead of 6:30?
Yes, the plan is to make it permanently 6 for the So, it was no one on the phone, but yes, that's the next one. So, 6:08.
Okay, so I just will point out that we are adjusting the schedule to allow for Kristen Dorsey's participation despite not having had it last month and not having had much of it this month. But we will make the adjustment so that we can have our board liaison presence as much as possible.
You will be at every meeting, Captain?
I'm sorry?
Kristen will be at every meeting that we have.
That was the theory. That was the theory. Our sample size is small, but that has not yet proven to be the practice at all times.
Perhaps we might want to look at changing our standing agenda around a little bit so that we could include him at the beginning of the meeting if he has to go. Because I know his family and everything. So maybe we could have comments from board member towards the beginning. And then, public comments and some other things.
That makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If we give Kristen the standing position at the beginning of the meeting.
Right.
Yeah, and he has, most of his presentations he's already...
He's heard.
Yes. Yeah.
So right. I think the most valuable part of it to him is to hear our comments on it, the questions that we have, which he heard some of today, so...
Also, along that issue about the agenda, I do think that it is important that we, as a writer advisory committee, have input on the agenda. And one agenda item I would like to see at some point in the future, it's not next month or whatever, but I would like the issue of writer safety and security. That was the committee that I had worked on, and I think that's of interest to lots of folks. So I think it'd be good to have an agenda on that one meeting, and perhaps there are some other agenda items we might want to put forward, because I know that we also need to do this agenda in cooperation with the board so that we're giving them the feedback they need.
Catherine, I wasn't here in January because I was away. Did we gain any members or lose any members to your knowledge? I'm just asking. I know they talked about, I looked at the website that keeps there revising the writer, revising or something like that. It says, so I'm like, so have we lost people or gained? I'm just asking.
We are at 9. With the rewrite of the bylaws, our full strength was 11. We lost 2 at the end of last year. Neither Deb nor Bob continued on in 2019.
Yes. So, right there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, Deb McKenzie.
Yes,
so both of them are no longer members, which means we have 2 vacancies.
Okay.
I was under the impression we were going to be getting 2 new RAC members in January, which did not happen.
We did not pull it off. So,
was that due to lack of applicants, lack of being ready for the board? Is that due to the
board? It was lack of being ready for the board. It was not
the board's choice to skip it.
No, it was absolutely not. I would say it was absolutely not the board's choice to skip it. It was not anything about running the board after the holidays and also running around the stuff in the public hearings. So, now that those are done, and the only holiday coming up is President's Day, so I had to give a clear direction from my boss that we needed to vote in February.
I have a question about that. Are they going to be filled jurisdictionally or no? Or was that, I don't think that was clarified in the board, like in the new sort of bylaws. I think it's just like diversity.
Right. So generally. I believe, and I think I'm trying to pull up the website, but I believe Bob was. I'm trying to remember if Bob's
Maryland. Yeah, Bob's
Maryland. Yeah, Maryland County. I think it's from
And Deb Arlington.
And Deb was Arlington.
Okay, right, so we definitely need somebody from Virginia. Because right now we only have one Virginian, and you're supposed to have two jurisdictions, right? Two Maryland, two DC, two Virginia. So we need to find at least one person from Virginia. But I just don't know how the breakdown is, because right, the three of you are from Maryland, but I just, off the top of my head, don't remember every seat to assign.
Well, I'm Montgomery County, and you guys are PG, right?
Well, you're that's not how you're appointed anymore.
Right. Right, that's what I'm trying to figure out.
I guess what I'm saying is I don't, and I can, in fact, if you want to just give me a hot second.
Sorry, that's you.
Sorry, guys.
The webpage? So,
I mean, we don't need to know now. I was just curious.
Just because it will show everybody where they're pointing from.
Right, and as a reminder to everybody, as part of this redo of the RAC, the intention is that we will now be approximately half appointed based on where we live, and the others will all be at-large members, with the intention of those at-large members helping to fill the gaps in ridership patterns so that we make sure that we're not just focusing on where people use WMATA, but also we're focusing on how they use WMATA.
Right.
So I'm not sure, now that we've got multiple people from different jurisdictions, which of those people are considered to be the official appointees from the jurisdiction and which are considered to be the at-large.
Right.
You and I are DC.
We are. As is Colin.
And no, Colin. He's at-large. Colin's at-large. That's what I just said.
Right. So I'll double-check and I'll... I just want to make sure that what's up on the website is the latest, but I'll double-check and email you if it's not tonight in the morning. But we definitely need one person from Virginia.
So we're doing that now by state as opposed to jurisdiction, because
right.
Virginia has three jurisdictions, Tanya, Fairfax, and Arlington.
Right, so there are, so out of the 11 RAC members, six are appointed based on the state data, two DC, two Maryland, two Virginia. Not anything about county or state or anything like that. And then the other, then a TAP, AAC rep, and then there are four, sorry, five, I can add. Then there are five jurisdictions.
Four.
Oh, you're right.
Six jurisdictions.
Sorry, you're right. Four. So there are four jurisdictions. They can be anywhere. I mean, you know, obviously, I don't think we want all four at large positions to be from, you know, Cleveland Park. So, we definitely need one person from Virginia, and I believe Bob C. was the large, so I'm not sure there are five members.
Okay, so we can look forward to being back up to 11 after the February board meeting, which means that at the March RAC meeting, we should have two new members. And continuing on with some of the membership information, also in April, we should be having elections. That was written, and we changed the bylaws a while ago to have elections. The intention was to have them in April 2018. However, just about a year ago, we were put into deep freeze mode, aka the potential restructuring. So we did not have elections because everything was on hold for most of last year. This April, however, we are out of purgatory. And we are back into regular operating mode, so we will be holding elections again. All the positions are important, but keep in mind that one position that will be up for election is chair. I have now been chair of this volunteer group for, by April it will be about 2.5 years, which is an awfully long time for any volunteer group to have one person in charge of it. So start thinking about whether or not anybody else would like to be chair of this group. You would be more than welcome to be. We will have a couple of new members that you may have to win over, potentially. But in April, we do intend to hold our elections. So we will be looking for a rep from, or a chair, a different chair. And then we still have the two vice chairs from the other jurisdictions, whatever the chair is not from.
So doesn't the vice chair election have to be separate after the chair is elected?
Yes.
Because you won't really know what jurisdictions need to put up someone to run for those
Yeah.
Basically, we have to vote 2 months in a row?
No, just vote right after.
We do it on the same day after. That's what the
general... Just be prepared if you wanted to revoke chair and then...
I mean, unless no one wants to run, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
Well, and that has happened before, where it sort of got pushed off for the following month because there was not an extraordinarily eager chair candidate. So, yes, the intention is that at the April meeting, there will be a vote first for chair to determine who gets to run this wonderful group of people for the next at least year, followed by two votes then for vice chair.
I guess we would have to change bylaws because basically if it's only two people per jurisdiction, it's just the one, the chair and...
If you're appointed at large, you can be chair for whatever jurisdiction you want. So, for example, Colin is appointed at large, but he lives in the district, so he can be the district's vice chair.
And I would also say that the chair position has perhaps more oomph to it than either of the vice chair positions.
Mm-hmm.
I know we've had vice chairs. I would say that the chair is generally the one who writes the RAC reports, who tends to go to the meetings, who tends to be a point person whenever asked questions about the RAC, et cetera. The vice chairs tend to be the fallbacks whenever the chair is unable to do something. For example, Bob tended to be my common fallback whenever I couldn't attend something. It helped if Bob was retired and had more free time than some. So he was often the vice chair that I turned to the most whenever I was not available to do things. And this is all just segueing very nicely into itself, because speaking of things that I will be unable to do, work travel is coming up, and I will not actually be at the next two RAC meetings, because I will have to be in places that are not D.C. So I will be looking for somebody, and could be anybody, just say, to take over the chair room for those 2 meetings.
We can take one and not take the other, or whatever.
By all means, I'm happy to hand it off to the two vice chairs who remain.
Yay.
That sounds great.
You have our support.
And then again in April, there will be elections for, theoretically, a new slate, or at least a partially new slate of people.
So you wouldn't even vote?
But Catherine, you said you'd be gone for the next 2 meetings, which would be April.
Yes, it does mean that I will not be here for March or April.
Okay.
But she doesn't plan on going and get the chair for it.
So you're not running for chair again?
Correct. I'm more than happy to have somebody else take this seat.
Okay. Just confirming.
Yep, anybody who's got the enthusiasm and energy would be more than welcome to take the position.
I think we should wait until we get the two members in there.
Sure. I'm just planting the seed. I'm just letting y'all know what the future holds.
So you're both putting in your notice.
Instead of 2 weeks' notice, we'll have 2 months' notice. Right? So, yeah. All right, I think that's the extent of the administrative comments that I had. If anybody has any questions or further administrative-related topics, feel free to bring them up. Will?
This is for John. What's the status of the emergency drills or the exercises? Because I know that they were doing them, and then when we lost the safety committee, well, we lost all the committees. we haven't heard anything else about that.
We have asked the transit police to notify us when they're planning these emergency drills so that we can give them the option to participate. We haven't heard anything from them, so I can follow up and see if there's anything in the pipeline. But I haven't heard. We have to put that question because I know that that came up.
Thank you.
I believe Will had perfect attendance at those, at least for
the street. I wasn't doing perfect attendance, and I missed one that was out of town, and then I missed the last one getting out of town. So.
Yeah, the last one I didn't even find out about it
until
the week before it was happening, and it was like, oh, okay.
I didn't even know
about it.
There was one in Maryland as well that I found out about maybe like a couple days before. Not enough time.
Hello.
All right, well then my last question for everybody is who went to, if anybody did, go to any of the budget hearings that have been held over the last week?
That was one last night here.
Just wondering what feedback you have, or if you can report back on what people had to say.
I would say that it was a good crowd. It was probably about 20, 30 people. Interestingly, the meeting started off rather weirdly. We had a deaf individual who was there, and they had no interpreters. So he spoke for a while about communication and how WMATA needs to do a better job and how it can be effective. How can you hold a public hearing if you're not going to have that accommodation in place for deaf folks? So something that was not handled well, and I think that WMATA is going to take, well, I know, they're going to take a look at their policy. Because really, if you're holding a public meeting and you don't have interpreters, you really should postpone the meeting. But that's not what happened. The speakers had a wide range of topics. I mostly spoke on the, from the AAC side, and spoke about making the lighting in the stations better. Spoke about the ability, you know, of the shutdown to curtail, I think it's $400,000 a day or something like that, where WMATA was, you know, they lost that kind of revenue because of the shutdown. And not to, I emphasize not putting the, not balancing the budget on the backs of the disabled, but really not balancing the budget on the back of writers. Which there were people that also talked about the blue and yellow line, and what are they going to do over the summer. Hopefully there is going to be better planning. There was a lot of information that was given with respect to bus passes, and that they are making those bus passes more robust. They're also changing the I'm not using the right words, but the 15 minute delay time. Cutting it back to 10. And so, you know, you get reimbursed for your trips if it's, you know, 10 minutes late. There was a lot of talk about the buses. So I thought tonight was good. There were some folks that really are in bad shape with respect to having to wait for their buses. Buses don't show up. The next bus is in an hour. They're going to take Uber and Lyft, and they're in these transit deserts, basically. So, some very powerful testimony regarding that. We had good weather last night, so I think it was 25, 30 people turned up. I know that in Greenbelt the week before, I think they had 8. I don't know what Arlington had.
One. So, Alexandria had 1.
Alexandria had 1. Wow.
And that was the day of the polar vortex.
Yeah, we. They were nice to postpone it for us on that Tuesday. Yeah. That polar vortex was just going to be a killer. So, aside from the glitches on interpreters, which needs to get fixed, it will get fixed. Hearing was well done.
Quick question. I'm confused. Isn't going from 15 minutes to 10 minutes better for riders?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
In Alexandria, the only person that testified, she did, it was regarding the extending the rush hour, the times for rush hour, because basically she was saying that that it would be affecting the pocketbooks of some of the needy people that actually wait until rush hour is over so that they take the train after whatever rush hour. So that by extending it, you know, they would be affected no matter what. So that was the only issue that was brought up. As I said, there was a lot more staff people than only the one person. And she was actually a person that was from Oxon Hill, but she worked in Alexandria, so she decided to, she went to testify in Alexandria. So
And so the question on that, and I never did give an answer, we had the budget guy talk to our committee also. And I know they wanted to extend the rush hour from, what was it, 5 to 10 in the morning or something like that, extend for a couple hours. The question we asked, and we never got a straight answer, was are you then going to charge rush hour fares for that entire time, or you were just going to extend the service and not increase the fares? Because the disability community, if you want to increase the fares for that time, we paid twice the fastest route. So if you're going to increase the fare from, let's say, 5 a.m. to 10 a.m., disabled people will pay more money, you know, for a metro access trip. If you're just increasing the service, but you're not going to increase the fare from, let's say, 8 to 10 in the morning, that's a good deal. And that's, I think, what the general manager wanted to do, but we never got a commitment from the budget guy, CFO, and we got mixed signals also from the board. So I don't have an answer for that one. That's a good question.
And neither do I. The presentation, the actual presentation was also, it didn't mention it.
Can I chime in?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have the answer?
Yes.
Oh.
So the general manager's proposal was to extend the periods at which Metro offers rush hour levels of service from like a half hour, or I want to say it's 30 or however many, 30 minutes more in the morning, like until 10 a.m. And then I think it was an hour later in the evening until 8, or maybe 8:30. His proposal was to keep our fare structure as it is now.
Okay.
It was quick charging at 9:30, go, you know, drop down to off-peak fares, and the same at 7 p.m. drop down to off-peak fares. The board said we would like the option, because we don't, there are funding constraints, we would like the option to, if we're going to offer rush hour service, to charge rush hour fares. So, because that's a fare increase we're going to have to go out as part of the public process, that was what was advertised. The board can do any combination of, they can, you know, depending on if they're able to find the money and still balance the budget, they can extend the service and not extend the fares, they can extend the service and extend the fares, or they can do neither. They can keep the service as it is, keep the levels, you know, after 7 o'clock in the evening or after 9:30 in the morning to drop off, but the fares drop off as well. But we have to put all of those different options out for public hearing, so the decision hasn't been made yet. It could be, so right, we've got two things that are changing, so it could be three different things. Nothing changes, fares and service changes, or just service changes. We won't know until the board adopts the budget in March. So that is something that, you know, perhaps if the RAC wants to weigh in and have a discussion next month with recommendations on the budget, that may be something that you need to take a decision.
The other thing that was interesting, John, that also was discussed, was that there is late night service that has been extended, I think, via the bus for certain areas within the system, so that folks who have been working late night in restaurants and service industries are being taken care of by this pilot project. So that was a plus. So we've had those folks come here. And there was a good amount of those folks last night at the hearing that spoke about how they couldn't get to work on time, how they couldn't, you know, how they were stranded when they left. So that would be a plus.
Right, and that is also still developing. When Metro cut back its hours, I guess it was 2 years ago, to, you know, to closing at 11:30 on the weekdays, and 1 a.m. on the weekends, we added some late night bus trips on certain routes, in mostly in the city, but also in the suburbs. And the board needs to figure out if the current expanded service is going to continue. That's a whole other topic. There's different views on the board and all these things and resources on that. So if we bring the late night train service back, presumably we would cancel the duplicate bus service if we're providing train service. But I don't know, the board did not do this.
Oh, John, could you send me, I don't remember seeing the new things with bylaws that were adopted in November?
They're on the website.
Hmm?
They're on the draft website.
Oh.
Any other questions or announcements or proclamations? Okay.
I guess I would just say that I definitely prefer the 6:30 meeting time. And I also didn't know that we were meeting early tonight, so I'm sorry I was late. But I don't think the idea of accommodating Christian's schedule and just encouraging him to participate at a certain time in the beginning, I feel like it does kind of lose out on like what the idea of him being the liaison and participating on a regular basis with us. I'm not saying that we shouldn't put him on the agenda at a certain time moving forward, but I would still like to at least hope that he'll participate with us more so that we can be in you know, in continuing communication. But I'm just concerned with like what kind of, you know, it might lead him to believe that we don't really need him or want him as much as I think we kind of do. And then I guess as a follow-up, like, I don't know about this work plan. Are we going to be, do we need to draft something? Is that going to be approved? Or I feel like we're, should we wait till we have new members or the new chair? Or
it's my understanding, including the three priorities that we had in last month's chair report, were essentially our statements of the board saying, here's what we hope to work on over the course of the next year. Given that we don't have complete control over the information that we get and the activities that we are asked to do, putting together a more detailed work plan seems like it might not be the best use of our effort to me. If we were to get more detail about what the board is doing over the course of next year and exactly what they want us to do, then it would make sense in my head to focus more on the details of a work plan. But without a lot of detail or control, it seems that stating our priorities might be about as far as we go. Not being contradicted, so I'm going to run with that.
Is it something that that's either an issue of your interest to?
No, I just wanted to make sure that we didn't owe the board something because we want to give them what we owe them, and I know that we have a lot of stuff that we gave them already, you know, from years gone by that we never heard anything back, so I want to at least do our due diligence. But since we've already communicated our general sort of priorities, I think that we've obliged that request, and yeah, so let's move forward and we can maybe draft recommendations about the budget or, you know, about this new pilot or other things. We can get back to work.
Christian did indicate, so we, you know, obviously the board received the priorities as part of the RACS report last month, and so he indicated that last month's board meeting needs to take that up, needs to take those up, and so, you know, I think we can follow up with him, and there'll be discussion, you know, there's a discussion possibly. I don't know if the board feels the need to take a whole look and endorse that or not, I'm not sure.
Okay. And in the meantime, would the goal for March then be to have a further discussion about the budget, in part given the hearings of this last month, so that the RAC can sit around and determine what its recommendations are?
Yes.
Yes. We do. Do we have a little more time today, or if we want to have somebody specifically come to talk to the group next month? I'm looking at you, so I'm not sure who that person would be.
So I think what would be, I think what might be helpful and what we're doing, what we're doing now is that the public comment period for budget is still open until next Monday. So if and staff is going to take the responses that they got and do sort of a first cut of those to the board on February 28th. So we'll have that information, we'll be able to get that information to you, we'll be able to get sort of a high-level view of survey responses, some of the, you know, the feedback, the public hearing transcripts, all that stuff, so that when the RAC meets on March 6th, you all can sort of, you know, talk about the options presented in the general management budget, make some choices, or if you don't want to go that far, at least prioritize. Hey, if you can only do, you know, like the example Laura gave of here's 20 forms for the original forms. Anyway, do that on the 6th. The board right now is scheduled to adopt the budget on the 13th. So it would be a quick turn. We get them something the next week, but that can do it.
So you'll be sending us the or how?
Yeah, it will be part of the meeting materials.
The trick will be that whichever of you is chairing next month's meeting, you have to write up the recommendations and turn them around quickly within a couple of days.
Yeah, and that happened to help with that.
Yeah.
But the other trick is if there are a lot of materials, like if there are transcripts, those are going to be posted on the website, right? Or
I'm not sure how much we're all going to, I'm not sure the full extent of what we're going to post, but I mean, I think if there are summary materials available, which I think we're not going to expect the board to read through, you know, every transcript, and we'll make it available to them, but also we'll summarize. So, you know, those summary will be made available to the board for its end of February work. I can certainly be able to as well.
But you won't be able to make those available to us until the day of the meeting.
No.
Before, right?
So the stuff will be hopefully at least, if not by Friday before the RAC meeting, hopefully even before that.
That's great. That would help us.
Yeah.
So then we have time to review all that info.
Yeah.
I just want to put something out there as it relates to like the budget question in general. Is it sort of like revenue streams for WMATA? That's just been, I think I'm curious about just some, the amount of ads that are in the metro system, both on the bus and the rail. Like I end up seeing like more ads by WMATA for WMATA for like bus driver ones, and like, I mean, you have hundreds of thousands of people riding in there all the time. Like I would kind of be curious if we get more information about like how much money that does generate overall. And I know there was an article probably in the fall just about potentially like renaming stations and different things like, and getting that from private companies in terms of ways of additional revenue streaming into the system. It's interesting like how impactful that might be in terms of generating more money.
And John, has anything ever happened with the concessions within stations?
No, nothing.
That seems to have dropped off radars, at least that I'm aware of.
Yeah, I would have to check with our real estate folks, but I don't think that's our focus.
So, since we have our draft agenda that we want and need, we'll be primed to look at that summary information, hopefully at the end of February. Would we be in a position to adjourn our meeting?
To what evening meeting?
Yes.
I believe we would.
I propose we adjourn our meeting. Sergeant?
I hear no objections. Consider yourselves adjourned.
Thank you.
Feel free to head home.